Welcome back on this fine evening. We're listening to episode 89 of Matter of Opinion. Barnsley, how are you? As always, we kick off our episode. What's new and exciting with you?
I'm doing pretty good. Honestly, nothing too exciting going on here. You know, we're starting to, it's getting a little smoky here. You know, we got half of BC on fire, so we're getting a little bit of ash on the car every time I take it out and park it somewhere. And you know, we're slowly moving, I guess more so for you in Ontario, slowly moving towards the end of the golf season, but more into hockey season. You know, starting to get organized, get ready for the beer league season that is ahead of me. You know, got a new team this year, got a show out, keep that point per game up there that I had in the five game stint I had for them last year.
Do they have a fun and creative name?
So they named the team after like an old bar that shut down. It's a whole bunch of like Simon Fraser University guys. So they always used to go to the, I think it was called like Shadow or something, or like the Shadow Lager. So the team name is the Shadow Loggers. And the logo is like the old bar logo. It's decent. Like they got Chicago Blackhawks colors going. So just nice to have in the bag. You know, you get a true black jersey, true white jersey, easy to mix and match when you're playing some pickup or some shinny elsewhere. But, yeah, you know, I gotta say I'm pumped to put that jersey order in, get some fresh gear and get going for the season.
You have envisions of yourself being Patrick Kane coming down the right wing and scoring a goal in the Thursday night men's league games?
I do like my five hole goals. So, recreate that Stanley Cup winner from Patty Kane, but these days it's, as you know, it's a lot of bank shots and deflections for me.
Greasy goals. The king of greasy goals for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. We go to the greasy areas. These guys like calling me Claude too. They think there's a large resemblance between me and Mr. Giroux.
Sure. Why not? Sure. I mean, there's worse comparisons. So
when there's a helmet on and all you see is the beard.
Yeah, I can buy that. Yeah,
I had a couple guys that we played against comment a bit to me too, and I'm like, really? All right. I guess it's got to be true if it's not just people I know messing with me.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know what? There's worse comparisons to have than
Claude Giroux. It could be Ed Sheeran. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Something that we would often make fun of you for whenever we're trying to piss you off. But yeah, there's you know, your celebrity lookalikes are always fun. We got to get back on topic. And one of the most exciting things to happen this past week is Spain winning the Women's World Cup. I did not watch the championship game, but I did see the Spanish team beat my Netherlands and see them really just, since what, the 4-0 loss to Japan, they kind of just took care of business and obviously won out. So it's an organization and a team that, I don't know, they were obviously one of the top teams going into it, but I don't, to my recollection, they were not the favorite going into the World Cup. But, you know, being the soccer guy you are, what are your takes on the Spaniards winning the World Cup?
Yeah, so, I mean, going in, I think the favorites were obviously the U.S. Frozen. You had good Sweden. I think the Netherlands were up there. Japan was up there. Canada was...
Oh, there we go.
What was the last thing you heard me say?
Oh, I didn't hear you say anything.
Okay. So yeah, like going into that tournament, I think looking at it, you had obviously the US were the big favorites. I think Australia was up there. Sweden was up there.
England,
yeah. And then I think it was just kind of, you know, who's going to be the best. Germany would have been up there too. But if you look back at it, prior to this World Cup, Spain had never been past the round of 16. And I think a lot of people would look at it and be like, okay, well, like the round of 16, a lot of countries don't get past the round of 16. If you look at the women's tournament, prior to this year, I believe it was only 24 teams that were in it. So that's only like a lot of people get into the round of 16. Like you kind of just had to be a decent team. And over the last 4 years since the last Women's World Cup was kind of when you saw the development of Spanish soccer on the women's side. Obviously, the Spanish men have been powerhouses for the last, I don't know, 25 years in terms of international football. But you just didn't see that development in the women's side. And I think a lot of it's come from, you know, the women's league where you see, you know, Barcelona's got their women's team. And you're starting to see the homegrown development in Spain. And then you just see what happens. Like the wealth of talent that they had on that team, it was just so deep in terms of who they had for substitutes. Obviously, you know, I was kind of backing the two countries that I backed for soccer, which is Canada and Germany. Both, much like the men's rendition, went out in the group stage. And at that point, you know, when I was watching, I was purely just watching to see what happened. Part of me did want, you know, Australia to come through and win it on partially home soil. But I think it's one of those things where you and I find ourselves agreeing on the fact that, you know, it's never a bad thing to have a first-time winner.
The parity it creates, and it's good for the brand and good for the sport as a whole, right, to see a, you know, theoretical up-and-coming federation win. But yeah, I mean, watching Spain twice, right, they're a team that played hard, played difficult, quick, right, played the Dutch incredibly well, and absolutely dominated both that regular time and then, you know, the 2 minutes in which they were able to generate a goal in that extra time. But I mean, yeah, I mean, the Spaniard soccer couldn't be at a better peak right now, so specifically the women's side. But I mean, it's interesting to see not only that succeed, but the men's FIBA championship is about to start, and the head coach of the Canadian team is a Spaniard as well. Jordi Fernandez. I'm not sure if you know too much about him or our viewers, but he's the assistant coach of the Sacramento Kings. I think he's largely connected to the offensive capabilities of the Kings. If you've ever actually watched a game of the Sacramento Kings, I haven't personally. This is just what I've seen and read, is that they're a high, fast-paced team that can score at will, kind of thing, kind of like that modern-age basketball. So we'll see. I mean, Nick Nurse obviously left the Raptors, and I guess that meant he left Team Canada as well. But I mean, you're looking at your starting five with the two forwards of Kelly Olynyk, Dylan Brooks, and then your guards are really where the Team Canada thrives, and that's Shea Grogris Alexander, RJ Barrett, and I'm gonna butcher his name, French Canadian Luingens Dort. That's horrible. I'm so sorry. And then, that fills out the starting five. And then no Jamal Murray, and then no Benedict Mathurin out of Indiana as well. So there's some big names there and big names missing. You know, what are your expectations going into this, you know, FIBA World Cup?
I mean, it'd be cool if they made it out of the group stage. Like that'd be fun. I did not know that was approaching until last week. I will be completely honest with you, Jack. It's just like international basketball is not something that, you know, it doesn't tickle the fancy. It doesn't get me going. I care about it during the Olympics. Watching Canada try to qualify and get so close for 2020 or 21, depending on, you know, which stream you go down for those Olympics. That was cool. And, you know, we talked to Trey. He was on the team. I think he's on the team again.
Yeah.
It's
incredible.
So that was cool. Very cool. You know, if they make it past the group stage, I'll probably tune in at that point. I'll really get into it. But it's another one of those team sports that, aside from hockey, Canada just, you know, finds a way to underperform on the international stage in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, you always hear the surprising defeats to, you know, Lithuania, Australia, right? Teams in which
Greece without with knowing, nobody with the last name Antetokounmpo.
And then they, you know, a tight battle with Germany, and then it's just like, you know, like they time and time again will lose to for people who don't follow basketball at all, right? You're just surprised by things like that. But I mean they're playing France, Lebanon, and Latvia. I mean, I imagine they go at least 2-1 through that. You know, maybe France is the team, you know, without Tony Parker. But they got Victor Wembanyama. I think he's playing. I don't see why not. But you expect them to go 3-0 and then see where they line up and who they play against in the following round. But I mean, that's been Canada basketball for what, the past 10, 12 years? Building, creating this top end NBA talent, and then, you know what, a third of the guys show up with that, the success just isn't there. But I mean, hopefully this is the year. Hopefully this is the year.
There's really just like no emphasis put on international basketball in terms of the star guys. Like, you get the, like, Spain usually historically it had a pretty good showing. And then you get the US, which, like, the guys just want to play for the U.S. team because it's like, oh, let's see if we can drop 200 on somebody. Like, I swear it's just like the U.S. team is just an ego boost of sorts. But that, I think that's a bit of the issue. You get a lot of the top guys aren't necessarily like jumping at the bit, or at least from an outside perspective as a Canadian, it just doesn't seem like they care.
Yeah, that's that kind of North American style where what's the real benefit of going? You're playing for a country, but you know, you could miss NBA games. You could, depending on the contract, you've heard some guys are scared they could be losing money by whether it's their free agency year, or sometimes you've heard horror stories of guys being able to get their contracts voided to a degree. But yeah, I mean, it's always not upsetting. I guess we're used to it at this point, but it's always sometimes frustrating to see some of the big names for Canadian basketball not attend the camp when you're thinking from, you know, an athlete's perspective, why wouldn't you want to go represent the that beautiful logo of the basketball with the Canadian flag somewhat intertwined and all that. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be something to watch. Friday is France, Sunday Lebanon, and then the, you know, a week tomorrow will be, I guess, week today when you're listening, will be Latvia. So, yeah, I mean, best of luck to Team Canada as they try and, you know, capture, I imagine, their first FIBA World Championship.
Yeah, it would definitely be their first.
I don't know. Every once in a while you hear like an old like Seattle Metropolitans history where they've won the Stanley Cup at like 1912 or something. But
I mean, it's maybe the year the basketball was invented, and then, you know, if they held a tournament and the Canadian YMCA roster was just so stacked,
yeah,
throwing the ball through the peach basket.
So you always hear those stories of like random Canadian universities winning like the World University Championship, like UFT beats Kansas in a game of 21. Like, it's just, you hear stories of that and you're like, okay, I'm sure that happened. But I mean, you know what? They're trying to capture their championship, and they're taking knocks at their chances. And that's something, you know, we'll see what happens with Michigan. But Jim Harbaugh was just handed a 3-game suspension by, what would they call it? Like Michigan Athletics, with the Department of Athletics. And for those who don't know, it's essentially he got a slap on the wrist from recruiting issues as well as misleading an NCAA investigation. What's interesting about this one was Michigan and NCAA had a temporary agreement and suspension, which was rumored to be between 4 and 6 games. At the 11th hour, that fell through. And then Michigan came out yesterday saying, we've suspended Jim Harbaugh for 3 home games, including East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, all 3 of which they're favored by at least 20.5 points. So you don't envision a close game. Yeah, exactly. But you know what? You definitely follow NCAA football more than me. What's kind of your – do you make anything of this? Do you feel like maybe NCAA is still going to come down on him? What's your take?
Well, so the NCAA originally came down on him. And then the internal board with the NCAA voted against the suspension. Like, I'm not exactly sure how the governing of NCAA football works, but I think this was last week that it came through that he was getting suspended, and then they voted against themselves to not impose the suspension. So I think this was just kind of like Michigan trying to save face a little bit. Knowing that realistically it's not going to cost them anything. They're playing 3 schools that, you know, I think Michigan gets a bad rap for historically over the last 4 or 5 years. Like the first 3 or 4 games are very easy games for them to just kind of get themselves into the season, get some of the star players' touches on the ball, be able to get them out of the game, make sure that, you know, they're healthy. They're going to be good to go throughout the rest of the year, and then see what you've got for, you know, the underbelly of the roster. Like I'm going to say it right now, Michigan's going to win the national championship. I think
have you
that,
put money
that
on that
is just so good. With Blake Corum coming back, JJ McCarthy, coming back, like it's just that team's going to be so good. And quite frankly, like they just got unlucky against TCU last year. And I still think they were the best team in football or in college football, but yeah. Ultimately, I mean, I guess it could be a bit of a distraction, but they're getting it sorted now, rather than having to take this into the season and worry about Harbaugh's availability. So I don't really see this being much of an issue once we hit, you know, week 0 or week 1 on the NCAA schedule.
Yeah, this isn't really make too much to make any changes for those who follow NCAA football. I mean, Michigan will still obviously go 3-0 and keep riding the win column, but I mean, it wasn't too shocking, right? And it's which
no,
is kind
of
it
makes sense. There was a lot of violations that he had. So quite frankly, like when it came out, and I think it came out around April or May, that this was likely going to be what happens. I think that's when he seriously considered jumping ship and being like, all right, like I'm going to end up having to give some of my salary back. I'm going to get suspended. Do I just, you know, at this point go back to the NFL? And I can't remember what the only – it was one team that he was willing to go to. It might have been Denver. And, you know, they flew him out. Like, they had a couple of meetings, and it just came down to, you know, no, I'm going to stay at Michigan. But I think that was about as close as we were going to get to Harbaugh being back in the NFL. And I think that pretty much sealed his fate as staying at Michigan for as long as he wants to be there.
Yeah, well, nice memory too. It was Denver and Carolina he had interviewed with. So, yeah, I also remember hearing that list, whether you know what, whether it was a narrative set by his agent that said he only has interest in two teams, rather than, you know, you always hear those guys where they're like, oh, I have, you know, behind closed doors, they're like, I'm willing to talk to anyone. But then once it comes out, they're like, no, I had two teams. Well, that was it.
I'm willing to bet he's making north of $8 million at Michigan. So
yeah, he's not too worried there. But I mean, yeah, he was criticized earlier on for not having that immediate success that I don't think he promised, but people expected. But you're kind of seeing it now come all together, and Michigan's really that powerhouse that everyone, well, you know, their student and their fan base and their alumni all expected them to be. But you know, to no less, the Michigan football is very much alive. But what isn't is the Chicago Blackhawks, as we've seen their captain. You know, people knew Jonathan Toews was not going to return to that organization, but he took a year off. He's essentially going to repair his body, see where the teams are going to unfold next year, salary cap, more money being available, as well as potentially a change of a landscape with where he could fit in. But what did you take of that then move? And I know you're not much of a fan of his game, but I mean, it's big for the game of hockey.
I mean, I don't know if at this point Jonathan Toews was putting butts in seats. I don't think he was much of a selling factor at this point in his career. It looked like he was going to have a bit of a resurgence when he had a career year at, what, 2 or 3 years ago, and then nothing happened after that. He got COVID, long COVID effects. I'm going to be surprised if this guy plays another game in the NHL, to be completely honest. He got into, what, 30 games last season?
I thought he was closer to 40, but yeah, it was.
I don't recall much. Him being overly productive. And he's at the point where he's, what, he's 34, 35?
He's 35, had 31 points in 53 games last year.
Yeah, pretty good. Like,
for what he's playing with, but he was playing a lot. I think he was first line center.
That's the thing where you get some, like, it's the Patrick White effect, is what I'm going to call it. It's like, you get the playing time, you get into situations that you quite frankly shouldn't really be in. And suddenly, you know, your production jumps up to numbers that it realistically wouldn't be if you were, playing in the correct spot that you'd slot into in a solid lineup. But I just, you know, he's going to come back. By the time he comes back, you know, he's 36, getting close to 37. I don't see him being in a position to really help anybody out at that point. It's a year away from the game. Inevitably you're going to get slower. The senses are going to, you know, go away to a certain extent. I think he's better off just, you know, saying I had a solid career. I won 3 cups. I won a Conn Smythe. You won a Lady Bing or a Selkie or whichever one it was. A gold medal, and, you know, just walk away and say he's got the same Hall of Fame argument as Chris Kunitz.
I was going to say, maybe he's just going to play another year to prove to you that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But I mean, I wasn't totally surprised by this. I think we've kind of seen possibly the increase in these more weathered, experience highly successful careers of athletes taking a year off or taking the appropriate time off, whether it's 6 months, 8 months, right? We saw that really happen with Gronkowski, right, with Tampa Bay. He took the year off, went back. I mean, he wasn't himself, but he was still impactful, right? He had that relationship with Brady. And then we saw, you know, Kucherov, although, you know what, the long-term injury reserve, but we could see he had the appropriate rest. He was ready for that long playoff run, and maybe
Mark Stone.
So it's, you know, he wanted to move out of Chicago. He obviously felt like that culture, not the culture, the team was going in a different trajectory and he wasn't going to be a part of it. But I mean, you know, first thought was, you know, going back home to Winnipeg.
I think it's only Winnipeg or Edmonton. I think those are the only two teams that really make sense. And if you look at the trajectory with where Winnipeg's going, like if I was him, I wouldn't go there. Like, why would you touch that organization with a 10-foot pole if you know you're in the twilight years of your career? Realistically, you're not going to make a whole bunch of money.
Yeah, it really comes down to where his focus is, right? Like, I don't know who his friends are, right? Like, where are his friends playing in the NHL? Is his family from somewhere? Does he want to go live in like a completely different experience going from the high octane, you know, fan heavy Chicago to, I don't know.
I also Buffalo, think he has to consider different... like you're going from Chicago where, you know, that's a team that they've got the Bulls and they've got the Bears to compete with. And realistically, as a hockey team, like you're kind of an afterthought, even with the success you've had. And you can,
they love their Blackhawks there when they're good.
Yeah. But I would imagine like you can live for who he is a relatively normal life. You're not going to get that if you go to a Canadian market. And I think the Canadian market's the only place he's going to go. So I think that weighs on him too. Like you're struggling away from the ice as it is with, you know, your health and the effects of long COVID. I don't necessarily know if you want to mix that in as well.
Only one person will know what he wants. So that's up to him, but it's cool. I mean, it's cool in the sense of like it's his decision, right? It's not like it's taken by injury, right? Where he's forced to retire, like you're seeing like some of the, you know, his past teammates with.
I mean, like to a point it is, because you know he's dealing with effects of long COVID. So I guess it's kind of like 50-50. I think he's not completely in it anymore. Plus the fact that, you know, we've seen him struggle over the last three seasons.
Yeah, and I know you're hard on him. You're not the biggest Jonathan Toews fan in the world, but I mean, hey, like there's for a player of his experience and what he could bring into a locker room and maybe PK too, he is still a valuable asset to a team, but. You know, the Hawks are moving a different organization, and that's something similar to what we've seen with the three-team trade of Erik Karlsson. I mean, Detroit's eventually got a part of that too with the Jeff Petrie trade, excuse me. But what did you we really didn't go too much into that trade, did we not?
Honestly, I can't even remember. I don't think we did, because you were here when it happened.
Yeah,
I think it was just like I think we had a 20-minute conversation in the car about it. But I think I just it's interesting because you can look at it like, well, San Jose kind of got fleeced because all they did really was take on a whole bunch of salary. And like, yeah, you got a first round pick out of it, but realistically, where is that first round pick going to be? It's going to be, you know, 23 or higher or lower. It's going to be between 23 and 32. If you're Pittsburgh, you know, you did a good job of not really having to give up anything, but you just traded for a guy who showed that when Brent Burns was on the team, and he wasn't the sole offensive focus on the back end, he wasn't as effective. And now you're bringing him in with another defenseman who's shown that he has around, you know, 0.8 point per game on a consistent basis potential in Chris Letang, who's also been there his entire career, is established. Him, Malkin, and Crosby are all best friends. I know Dubas fell in love with Karlsson when he was in Toronto. I think he fell victim a little bit to being with an organization that could figure out how to bring Karlsson over. You're trading for a 35-year-old defenseman who just had a career year, won a Norris. what happened the year after Mark Giordano won the North?
This, you know, this is like, this reminds me of another experience of Dubas. I mean, albeit this is kind of on steroids, but the fact of when, you know, Morgan Riley, right, had that career year in Toronto, and shortly after Dubas had brought in TJ Brody, not TJ Brody, excuse me, Tyson Barrie, right? I mean, he did bring in Brody, but that was a different interaction. Tyson Barrie joins a team in which a lot of people thought it was going to be a great, you know, two-headed offensive monster. You're going to have two lines on the right side of where guys are, or left side, where guys are going to dominate, but I mean, it didn't really work out too well. And this looks a lot like
guys who live on the power play, and you can only put one defense. I mean, you can put two defensemen out on the power play, but then, like,
they're both puck guys. Like they both play similar to each other on that power play.
Yeah, so like, you've got too many forwards on that team to take one of them off. Like it's just not going to work. And those are two guys that they both like to control the puck. You know, it's two quarterbacks that you have on the power play. There's a reason why people generally don't put two quarterbacks on the field.
What's, you know what, as sad as it sounds, both those guys are prone to missing time, and maybe you can just kind of get it to work well enough to where they're both happy and you both can make it work. But I mean, like you said in the trade, they really didn't give up too much. I mean, Granlund's an interesting asset going to San Jose, where a guy maybe just, he had success in Minnesota. Right, it just didn't really work out in Pittsburgh for whatever reason.
He's kind of a wild card at this point, where, you know, he's one of those guys that, like you said, he has the potential. He just, you know, he hasn't played up to it in the last four seasons.
I think he scored 3 points in 25 games with Pittsburgh when he got dealt there. So it's just a matter of, like, it didn't work. I mean, they brought in, I think, like a C-level prospect in Dylan Hamilick. They got a third, and then Rem Pitlick, who I imagine will be a depth player, who a guy actually asked for a trade from Montreal. But I mean, he freed up $3.1 million in cap space by making that trade. So he did a hell of a job. You know, once again, Dubas is the master of getting a lot of pieces involved and making that trade. Like, but
you've got a lot of money committed to him and Chris Letang for the next 4 years. Because I think Letang signed a massive, like, 7-year contract 2 years ago, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it was like a 6-year deal. So.
And then obviously, like, you're gonna have Crosby re-sign at a, what one would assume would be a high rate for a relatively decent term. That's gonna take him to, you know, the age of 40 or whatever it is. It's, you know, they're getting dangerously close to being the Brooklyn Nets that had Garnett, Paul, and Paul Pierce.
Yeah, no, for sure. For sure. I mean, all their prawns will align. It is a team in which he's going for it. But hey, and you know what? We'll come down to probably end of September. We'll do our breakdown. But I think with this acquisition, it guarantees them a spot in the playoffs. I don't see how this roster, with how strong it is and the additions of, you know, Riley Smith and others will be good. But I mean, Dubas has really turned that Pittsburgh team from a fringe playoff team to, in my opinion, a certified 100% playoff team. So,
Jack, I don't know if I'm going to agree with you there.
No.
This is a September conversation, but I think they're still under Buffalo and Ottawa.
I know you're Ottawa. I thought Buffalo that Labushkin trade, I didn't really understand. I mean, going into that offseason, right, you're looking at where their depth would align, right? And they bring in Eric Johnson and Connor Clifton, right, to kind of fill in that fifth and sixth spots. But maybe they saw what they were going to see in camp, or they liked the prospects and thought, you know what, let's move Labushkin. We want to see those minutes. Give him to someone else and bring in a fourth round pick off of Anaheim, which will, you know, chances are will be a pretty early fourth round draft selection. But yeah, that's a team you and I both talked about. And once again, we'll bring it up in September. But you know what? The offseason keeps going. There's still some big names left. Patrick Kane, Thomas Tatar, like, you know, big names. Thomas Tatar, Phil Kessel's available. Still guys I'm interested to see where they're going. But probably the average hockey fan is not. That is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Phil Kessel gets signed, it's a PTO.
Yeah, at this point, it's not looking too high.
No, I think he's at the Alex Chase on stage, where he's signing PTOs and seeing where he can go and if he's a good fit somewhere. And yeah, Patrick Kane's not getting signed until November, December.
He's got that surgery, the hip surgery.
Yeah, he's a guy who, you know, he needs to recover, and then I think he's going to give himself that liberty of, you know, seeing how the start of the season plays out. And he's a guy that, you know, he's made enough money. I think he showed last year that with that trade to the Rangers, he's still got that want to win, and, you know, he might enter the ring chase stage of his career. And I think he's just going to, you know, look at it, see who's in the best position to go long in the playoffs. And, you know, maybe he does go to New York, you know, if he does, and they've got a third line of Blake Wheeler, Philip Hedl, and Patrick Kane, like, that's pretty damn scary, or Lafreniere, or whoever's on that third line. Like, that's, I don't know if there's a lot of defense being played there, but the offensive potential
top heavy
would be pretty damn scary. Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think that's something you get more with football, where guys will hang out and then sign mid-season. Not really when you get a whole bunch in hockey, especially with the top-level guys.
No, I mean, yeah, he's rumored to have been interested or talked to Avalanche, Stars, Islanders, and Bruins, right? So, like you said, there's a lot of teams that would love to have him. I think the Stars would be pretty cool to see him kind of slot in that second line right behind Seguin playing the wing. But I mean, yeah, he's a player that for the right price any team would like to have him.
Come to Vancouver.
But, yeah, I actually think with that offseason they've had, I think they've really done well, and that's a team I think could be a dark horse depending on how healthy they are, right? They're always find a way to get injury bug, but
if Demko goes down, they're done.
They're done. yeah, absolutely. They're probably the team with the biggest fall off if their starting goaltender goes down. But
I mean, it's
been a pretty dry 2 weeks for the NHL along with the NBA. I mean, Harden's keeping it entertaining, making fun of the Philadelphia 76ers organization. But I mean, I feel like the NBA knows it's been quiet, so they released the Christmas Day schedule. I don't know about you, but I'm definitely getting more involved with sporting events on Christmas. It's always been.
Yeah, again, I just get drawn more into the NFL side of the Christmas games. Obviously this year they decided to not put any. Last year I think they had a full day slate where they had a morning and afternoon and a night game, and it was freaking awesome. This year they decided to go with the Jets and the Dolphins on Christmas Eve, and then the full slate on Boxing Day, which is a Sunday. So maybe I do get subjected to some basketball on Christmas Day. Probably not, but, you know, yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, Christmas has evolved from you're young, you know, usually you get a new video game for Christmas, and, you know, you open the presents and then plug that into the PS2 or the Xbox 360 or whatever the console was at the time. And yeah, now it's gotten to you know, do whatever the mini routine is at this point, and then you know, turn the TV on and hang out in front of it, and or do some online shopping with fill the holes that Chris that you know, gift didn't quite get to.
Absolutely, no, for sure. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I think you got Christmas Day. You got Raiders, Chiefs, Giants, Eagles, Ravens, 49ers. So that's That's enough to keep you entertained for the day.
Says that those are on the 26th for me, but I might be wrong.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. Some technical difficulties maybe. But I mean, it's the schedule, it's been cool. We're ready to watch some Pats and Dolphins, but I mean, it's you can't fully prepare for the season yet when you have some big names like Jonathan Taylor still available, which has been absolutely entertaining to see that whole debacle go down. But I mean, the Colts have allowed his agent to find a trade, which I mean, the expectation is that the fee will be very, very high. And the Dolphins are rumored to be interested, which is a little frustrating to me because they could have had Dalvin Cook at a much cheaper price. But I mean, Taylor's available. Obviously, your Pats won't be interested in him. They got their two guys lined up. But what do you make of the Taylor deal going forward?
Well, they want a first-round pick for him, or picks that add up to the value of a first-round pick. And that's just not going to happen.
That's a lot. Yeah,
But, I mean, there is some contending teams that do still need a running back. So I wouldn't say it's completely out of question. I mean, when you're looking at it, the Bills could definitely use somebody of that caliber. Obviously, you know, they've got James Cook and, you know, you have Josh Allen. So you're kind of like, why do you even need a running back? But I think Sean McDermott's been pretty vocal about the fact that he doesn't want Josh Allen running the ball as much as he has in the past. You know, he's trying to keep that durability up with the young quarterback rather than, you know, treating him as a college quarterback and essentially just running him into the ground. You look at the Bengals, you know, they lost Samaje Perine. Joe Mixon was awful last year. You know, they reworked his contract, and quite frankly, I don't think it would take much for them to just be like, all right, Joe, you're done. You know, give him the snip or you know what, trade him.
And trade him back as part of the piece.
Yeah. And then I think the other teams that you'd look at are, you know, maybe the Bears go after him. You give Justin Fields yet another weapon to go with Mooney and Claypool and DJ Moore. Suddenly that offense becomes really dynamic.
Washington? What do you think about Washington?
I think they're pretty set with Gibson and Robinson. That's just an offense that loves underwhelming pieces. You know, they were from every position, Sam included. Howell. Like, I don't really get it, but Ron Rivera's got something going on. I think the other teams that you're looking at are the Eagles and the Chiefs. Obviously, the Eagles went after DeAndre Swift, traded for him last or in the offseason. But that's a team that, you know, if you give Jalen Hurts a running back who's seen as a pretty unanimous top five back in the game, as well as, I think, what most people would say is probably a top three receiving core, maybe top five receiving core in the NFL. That's just, like, we're getting to the point that's just unfair. And, you know, they can book their tickets to wherever the Super Bowl is tomorrow.
Is that a running back room, though? I mean, you have Kenneth Gainwell, who they use quite a bit, Boston Scott, who they would throw in some pretty key moments. And then, like you said, right, they brought in Rashad Penny and DeAndre Swift. I mean, you got four guys there that last
you
year
do,
were
but it's also
healthy,
like,
were used.
None of those guys are as good as Jonathan
Taylor. Oh, yeah.
Like, Jonathan Taylor's your one-trick pony. And then, you know what, you look at it, and it's like DeAndre Swift plays a very similar game to Jonathan Taylor, and you put the two of those in there, and they can go in and out pretty easily. And then I think the other one is you look at the Chiefs. The Chiefs got a lot of holes, as far as I'm concerned, in skill positions. Obviously, you got Kelsey, but once you go to the receiving core, it, you know,
that's weak.
It's Darius Toney, it's Sky Moore, it's the, I think his last name's Rice, who they drafted in the fifth or sixth round of this year's draft. They still have Marquez Valdez-Scandling there. They might. I think so. Yeah. Yep. Like it's not great. And I understand you have Mahomes, running backs. They got Jerick McKinnon, and Isaiah Pacheco. I love Pacheco. I hate the fact that I'm saying that because I don't like the Chiefs, but that's a guy who just runs downhill. I think what you're worried about is he kind of runs into the same career that Ezekiel Elliott had, where maybe he takes too many hits too early, and kind of uses them all up. I just think that's like, if you have the ability as the Chiefs to give Mahomes that weapon, I think you have to at least go down and see what the cost would look like for you.
Just throwing fantasy GM, what would you do? Probably CEH, a second and a third, or 2 seconds?
No, you're probably looking at Clyde a second and like a fifth.
A fifth.
Because like
they want the first round value.
Well, like maybe you go a second and a fourth, but in the NFL, a second and a third is worth more than a late first round pick. Like I don't have the. You'd have to look at like a draft.
The numerical.
Yeah.
The value like that the GMs
they give the value scouts put it on. You. Exactly. But you're definitely not getting 2 seconds. Like, obviously, if we're in Madden 24, like, you're giving up 2 seconds probably. But, you know, it doesn't work like that in real life. And ultimately, I think they're going to realize, like, I just think it's hilarious that, like, you got the Colts who are asking for a first-round pick for this guy, and the Colts have been the team that's essentially, like, led the charge of not paying running back. And saying, like, you guys are useless. or worthless. So, like, it's interesting to me to look at that and be like, okay, guys, like, you got to pick a side here. But at the same time, like you're offering a top five running back in the NFL who's still under the age of 26. I think this is going to say a lot in terms of where the value for running backs is at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw Barkley cave to a degree, right, and sign his deal. I mean, Josh Jacobs is still held his perspective and not signed. Pollard, to my recollection, hasn't signed as well, right? And who else am I looking for? Dalvin Cook signed for $8.6 million, right? And that's a guy that was
the most. That's if he hits everything, right?
Yeah,
like
right. So
Zeke signed at 6.0 if he hits everything.
What's his base salary?
I think it's 3 something or 4.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's just like it. I was talking about this earlier. Like, it's tough as a running back knowing that if you go top 10, your rookie season, you'll make the most money you ever make, no matter how good you are. Like, Bijan Robinson is the top paid running back in the NFL this year. That's ridiculous. Like, when you've got Derrick Henry and CMC and Jonathan Taylor and Josh Jacobs and, you know, Nick Chubb and on and on and on with these guys, like, it's nuts to think about the fact that, like, that's a guy who, you know, they're directly handling a third of the snaps you take. Like, they're the core piece of, you know, probably 30% of the snaps that you take in a game. And, you know, you don't want to pay them. I mean, the history's there that you don't really need a running back to win a Super Bowl, but it's just mind-boggling to look at from a distance, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's interesting. I'm looking at it right now, and they're looking at the average running back salary cap hit. Right, you got 49ers with McCaffrey first, and then the boys that have signed franchise tags of Pollard and Jacobs at sixth, Cook at ninth, and so forth goes down the list. But I mean, it's such an interesting topic, and it was really took over social media there, and all the American sports communication companies talking about how it's a broken system in terms of the running back payment structure. There's solutions, you know, some people have thrown out, oh, maybe you put an associated cap per position rather than team. And then one other theory I heard was you kind of make running back draft selections kind of like their own thing, right? Where a running back first round pick is one salary, a running back second round pick is another salary. So people are sharing their ideas. I mean, it's all fun to hear these ideas. Will anything happen? I don't know. Probably not. Yeah, I'm thinking probably not. This is just, you know what, growing up, it's such a cool thing because obviously I played, you know, just rep football in Canada, which isn't much, but I remember, you know, when we were slotting in practice, whatever, running back, man, you're the shit. It is the coolest position Nobody can throw too, but like it's the place to be. It's cooler than running the power play in hockey. It's probably as close as to carrying up the basketball and being the point guard. Like it's up there. The running back is the shit. Which is pretty cool. But I mean,
it's second to wearing the C.
So it's really cool in that way. But I mean, it's tough. Like. That's one of the things why I loved playing corner was I wasn't getting smoked every time I was touching the football. And you've seen guys now too, where some of the guys are able to create longevity with their career by able to read situations and cut out of bounds, or, you know what, I won't take the second or third hit. I'll just take the one, but it's cool to see it that way. But I mean, it's tough to see a guy at age 26 be told, yeah, we're kind of done with you when you've only played 3 years, right? Some guys come out of university even later. They've played 2 years and they're already getting cut. But it's just, it's tough to see that. You never want to see that.
Destin Bennett's 27 and he's...
I saw a thing with Pat McAfee that how he could be the starting QB for the LA Rams if Stafford gets injured again. But
hey, yeah, man, I mean, Brandon Whedon, 28-year-old first round quarterback.
Wow, there you go. That happened. There you go.
So, you know, I mean, it was the Browns, but I don't have a whole bunch else for you.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, just when I was looking over my notes, it's been pretty quiet. I mean, F1 essentially had their mid-season break. They have a three-week break. They call it summer break, and it was filled with drama. I'll keep it simple for you and simple for F1 listeners. Alpine's in the shit. They fired everyone of a key role. They fired essentially the guy that runs the performance aspect. He's gone. He had some remarks. So you could always search that up. Alpine exit interviews were fun. Charles Leclerc signed a 2-year deal with Ferrari, which will run until the 2026, which is it's interesting to know because that's when there's a new engine for F1. So that's kind of, it resets the seating. Sainz agreed in principle with a deal with Audi. This is funny because Audi's not actually a team right now. Audi's taking over for Alfa Romeo in 2025. So essentially what this means is Alfa Romeo has two drivers signed, one for the next 2 years and one for next year. And Sainz is going to essentially steal a guy's spot for when Audi takes over. It's just a fun fact. You don't really see that happening too often. And then Alex Albon is a race car driver for Williams. He's had an interesting career. He was a kind of like a young phenom coming up. Drive to Survive did a little bit of an episode on him. It's really dramatic, as you would expect with Netflix, but it's pretty entertaining as well. He's interesting because he's kind of the guy that a lot of teams respect and like because he's a very quality driver. He's also like a very good human being, but he drives for essentially the worst team and puts up very good results. So it's always that kind of mindset of, oh, if we bring him on to a better quality team, how good could he be? Right? Kind of like the age old trade for a guy that's really producing on a bad team in hockey, football, basketball, whatever you want to say. But yeah, that's really it. F1 in a nutshell, a fast minute, if you will, but that's all I got for you.
Yeah. We The fun one I had for you is the top 10 countries with the highest medal counts in the Olympics combined.
Summer and winter.
Please note that the USSR and Russia are not the same.
I was that was gonna be my first question. I'm glad you brought that up.
Everything else is business as usual.
All right, so I get three X's and then I'm out again.
You get three X's.
Perfect. It's always a fun segment. Thank you for listening and enjoying the podcast, as many people will sure to enjoy this part and make fun of me. All right, so I'll just start it off with got to be patriotic. I'm going to go Canada.
Nope.
Perfect. You know what? I'll happily take that X.
They're 12th.
Yeah, that makes sense. Summer, man. We don't do well in the Summer Olympics. It's always a rough outing. Okay, I'll go USA.
Yeah, number one. So, nice. Jack, just to paint a picture, Canada has 551 medals.
Oh, no, I don't want to hear this.
326 are in summer, 225 are in winter. By comparison, the United States has 2,985 medals. 2,655 are in summer, 330 are in winter.
Holy shit.
So if you just look at winter, Canada is fifth.
There you go. That's nice. That's nice. I'll go to China.
China, six.
Okay. Russia?
Nope.
Really?
Russia is 11th.
Oh, they've had a rough 2 years, the rough two Olympic cycles, if you know what I mean.
They had a lot of the medals taken away.
Exactly. All right. Perfect. Two X's already, two ones on the board. USSR?
No.
There we go. That was a quick one, as always.
Yeah. We were looking for Germany in second, the UK in third, France in fourth, Italy in fifth, Sweden in seventh, Japan in eighth, Norway in ninth, and Australia in tenth.
Should have probably got at least four of those, but...
Probably.
I
kind of figured
I'm getting worse.
The opening with Russia and the USSR, different things might have... It was going to go one way or another, and you were either going to sprout off both of them really early, or you weren't going to touch them. And it went the way I was worried about.
Ah, good. Good. As always, I do very well at these games you create, and... Oh, it's so frustrating. Never once got close. What, four? Four of them I got right once? That was the best day of my life.
You got nine once.
Nine once. Oh.
I can't remember what the category was, but it did happen.
It's just so tough. All my notes. Just so depressing when it ever comes to the games. All right. Well, thank you for listening to another great episode. Barton, so you got anything else to add?
I got nothing.
Well, actually, you run a second podcast now. We should bring that up.
Yes.
The Snake Pit?
Me and good old Jakey Teal. Mostly Jake, actually. I just hop in here and there when his guests decide to not show up or that they just don't want to be on the show. but yeah, that's it's kind of a bi-weekly thing. Every second week. Yeah, go check it out. I mean, it's just fun. I mean, there's really no structure, no topic to it. It's just conversations with Jake, which it's always a good time.
There you go. Past guest on the Moo Experience, Moo Fan Club. But yeah, it's great guy. I've yet to listen. You know, in keeping honesty, I've yet to listen, but I will promise you it'll be the first thing I listen to tomorrow on my way to work.
There we go. And, you know, we hope it's the second thing that everybody listening to this listens to. So
perfect.
Once again, thank you and Moo.
Moo on.